The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Hot Stocks. It is the 1st of December. I'm in my grotto. Paul, where's your festive background, fella?
Ho, 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 Mr. Christmas. I'm glad to see you've already joined the festive spirit there. 25 days. Open that big advent calendar. Get the big chocolates this evening. But it's one of those things, isn't it? We've just had a November to remember, which has been great overall for small caps. And then you get sort of like clobbered on the, what I do anyway, on the first day of Christmas by a couple of stocks that I do own, Pfizer being one and Sondrel being the other, which I've just basically, I've written off Sondrel. And
I did mention that actually earlier on with John, where live show, John, I said Sondrel's come out. It seems like Siemens have just dumped their shares on the broker, haven't they? Look at that. Sorry. You did post this on Twitter, but you covered this as well. But I mean, this is the 4250. And literally, it is, look at that, up pretty much 9.42% from the low. Back in the start of November. So that's going well. And I was looking back, actually, Paul, at the stats on Great Financial Crash. And 4250 was the first indices to start rallying before the AIM All Share.
Oh, wow.
So it's very telling. Yeah, and FTSE 100 was last. But, FTSE.
Well, I was doing some analysis as well. And when you look at sort of like the UK's, you know, market, et cetera, not only is it the cheapest, but it's only just started to creep above its all-time lows on the small and the mid-cap. So when you look at it at the end of November, you've got sort of like from its sort of three-year lows, you've got your FTSE 250 is still only 9% up, even though it's rallied strongly. You've got AIM, which is sort of 6% up, but they're still well down from their, you know, three-year lows. And when you then compare that to, you know, America, I mean, America, both the NASDAQ and the S&P are almost at all-time highs again. So there's a huge sort of like, you know, mean reversion catch-up trade there. So I'm with you in terms of, you know, it's a positive sign. And in fact, we've had AIM, you know, ticking up as well this month. And it overall, my portfolio has done well. But yeah, I've been knocked a few times, but I'm positive. You're looking at your charts there, Justin. Okay.
That there, right? Sorry, that's a small cap, Russell 2000, that is. And literally, it hasn't fared as well as, of course, the NASDAQ and the S&P because of the big Magnificent Seven. But nevertheless, as you see here, you've got sort of an interim sort of support level here. It is sort of trying to rally, look, here. Mm. So that's up quite a bit. That's nice to see. Like I said, a broadening of the rally. Right? Yeah. December is very bullish. And I'm looking at it, it's something like, I can't remember, I did cover this on Taking Stock, but it's something like 80% of the time, December is a positive month.
I think most of those gains happen in the second half actually as well. But when liquidity. So get to the AIM index or the 250. AIM. Now I've got a question of the day for you here, Justin. Yeah. Where is it going next year?
Well, do you know what? It's like I said, it's rallied here, right? But it's faltering a bit. You will have this when you get a V shape.
What volume
gap,
though? What volume is it? Is the volume indicative?
I can't see the volume. It's trouble. But what I would say is that see this last support level here, and I put some lines on there. That's alert 728. We're at now 715. If we can get above that previous high first, which is like 722, and get about 728, that's very good because that's previous support there, and it's broke down below that. So, but I think we could do it. And do you know what? I was looking at this morning. I don't know if you saw. Of course you did. Taking Stock this morning, Paul. Of course you're an avid watcher. But I was looking at the house builders, right? And I was saying, if you're looking, they've all bottomed pretty much. Yeah. Even the bad news has come out. I'll show you some charts of some house builders.
Wow.
So that's Bell. That's Bellway. You got
That's Barrett's.
That's Bellway.
Wow.
You know, Gleeson is the lows are back in October.
Yeah.
And Persimony, even during the financial crash, that was the last one to rally. It's rallying. Taylor Wimpey. And I did do the spreadsheet on this. One of the best and the healthiest of them all. That's even breaking up through new highs. Previous, support there. It's really rallying. And you're thinking, hang on a sec. You know, interest rates are still high. But these, going back to the Great Financial Crash, and they were indebted massively, they rallied about 6 months before the indices bottomed. So that's a very good sign that these are rallying, the house builders, I think, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there was some good positive data, wasn't there, on housing prices this morning, which came out and said, they've on a month on month they've increased and they've slowed up the annualized decline as well, which says to me because of the because of interest rates expectations, the swap market for you know, for basically which drives the mortgage market has actually you know, come down. So it means that the cost of borrowing and the cost of mortgage has also fallen, and that seems to have boosted house prices. There's more transactions going through. So if you've got this sort of cost of borrowing and cost of a mortgage going down, and you've got house prices stabilizing, that's gonna, if anybody wants to get onto the housing market, then they're probably saying, actually, it's like you just done, it's bottomed out, so now's the time to do it. And no, it's got to be positive, because it has a big multiplier effect, doesn't it, the housing market, particularly.
That's exactly why I covered it this morning. I said it's not only, when you think of it, right, the house purchase is probably the biggest purchase most people will ever make in their lives, so it's a big risky thing to do, so you take your time over it, but also just the supporting industries it supports, you know, I mean, everything, isn't it, from DIY stores to tradesmen, everything, it sort of lifts the entire economy, really, so that starts doing well. But of course it's forward looking indicator, but you're talking about bonds here. I mean, look at that 2-year bond, government bond here, up at 5.5 pretty much in July. And it's been going down. And now we're at almost like this previous, you know, resistance line where it rallied. It's breaking down below that. So they're going in the right, everything seems to go in the right direction, you know, at the moment.
Yeah. So coming back to the big question then, let's nail your sort of prediction for 2024. Are we going to see basically a positive performance on AIM and the 250 next year, having had two really tough and brutal years?
Yeah, well, it's hard to guess. I think, first of all, right, it's a market of stocks, right? So there are some cracking deals out there to be had, I think. And if you've got a bit of patience, they'll play out. But I mean, I think we'll have a rally this end of this month, as always. But I do think we'll roll over a bit and come back and maybe retest as maybe a lower high in the next year.
Why is that? Would that just be a technical basis?
I just think the doom and gloom of the real economy will worry people a little bit, and you know, and I think any spending you have that's, you know, this that helps, you know, consumer facing companies and not at Christmas won't be there after Christmas. So I think if people are tightening their belts this at Christmas time, it'll be worse in the new year. People are really not going to spend, so I think you get a lot of bad data coming out, maybe. But then I think, you know, maybe you'll force central banks to be, in fact, did you see, who was it? Was it Bill Ackman or one of the guys? No, it wasn't Bill Ackman. It was one of the guys who bet the Fed are going to reduce interest rates sooner.
And I think it was Bill Ackman.
And I do think that we may be surprised by really the bad data getting worse quicker, because I think people really start tightening their belts in a new year. And, you know, I think the economy is really going to slow down a little bit. And so, the market then will look ahead as well. Gloom, economic gloom, which will tank the market a little bit after a rally after Christmas. Then I think, you know, the economic gloom will take the markets down a little bit. But then people think, hang on a sec, central banks, and they'll come out a bit more sort of optimistic about reducing rates. And I think the markets will then see ahead of that and rally towards, I think 2024, all in all, net, I think it's going to be a cracking year. I really do.
Brilliant. Okay, really, well, that's excited. Coming from Father Christmas there. So you'll be handing out a few prezzies over the next month. You'll then be playing the Grinch for a couple of months.
Yes.
And then you'll be basically 10 months of handing out the prezzies again then, probably, after a sort of consolidation phase. Yeah, I'm with you, to be perfectly honest. I mean, I haven't got the expertise in terms of timing it on a monthly basis, but I believe that, you know, we've reached a real bottom on valuations, and I think the indicators that you've highlighted definitely, you know, sort of like signify that you know, the small caps are going to move and may have already just, you know, hit their bottom. So I think the small caps are effectively flashing green at the moment. I think the FTSE will actually bottom early next year, and I think the Mag 7 are going to roll over. And as you talked about on the broadening, I think a lot of the money there, once the year end finishes and they start, and investors who own the Mag 7 out in the States, then sell to effectively to realize some gains after the tax year end, and it'll broaden the economy. So yeah, I think if you've got at least a 12 month time horizon, there's good times ahead in small and mid caps. And it was funny because I've just come back from a investor conference, Mellow, down in Chiswick, and the amount of optimism for small and medium caps, having had a really depressive time up to the end of October, is very, very positive. And a lot of the fund managers were saying the same. They believe, you know, we could really see a strong rally next year, because it's been taken down, and it's been, you know, not really on large, not that much volume. And all it needs now is that sellers to, you know, to dry up, And then you're going to get a lot of sort of like, you know, buyers who are going to really move the market because it won't take much to really shoot it up. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think if you've got a, if you've chosen reasonably well with your stock picking, as you say, it's a market of stocks, then yes, they won't all go up, but the actual tide is really sort of like, you know, it's coming in. So I think we're going to have a cracking year. Yeah, I'm with you.
Well, do you know what? It's funny. What, AI investor who commented earlier on the show, he said, I feel like now the market's just not going down. It's going sideways. And because of that, and all you need is that to happen to get a bit of confidence in the market. It's not going down anymore. And then you start, obviously, from then, the next step is going up. So I do think that we're at that sort of bottoming phase. And I don't know whether I'm getting better at this, at stock picking, or because the markets are turning. But I've just looked at my portfolio over the last 12 months. I'm up to 21% in the last 12 months.
Oh, wow.
And previous to that, I wasn't down a lot. Yeah. So I've had quite a cracking, you know, blow at stocks like Destiny and Good Energy. Yeah. But yeah, maybe I'm also becoming more discerning. I still hold about 30% cash. So I'm really still not the bull market crazy, just jumping into everything. I'm really taking my time thinking, you've still got to pick a good stocks that are good, you know, have growth, good value, and have good potential, and also with a bit of momentum with behind them. So you've still got to be very picky, I think. Stock picky, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the point is, if you've got 30% cash, that gives you sort of like you know dry powder, doesn't it? Because if you're right on that sort of call, that yes, we're going to have a bit of a Santa rally, but it's going to roll over. There's going to be a bit of consolidation as people sort of digest some of the negative economic data coming out in Q1. Then you will get more bargains. So yeah, but there will be a point when you won't have a chance because it will move and it will move very rapidly, no doubt about it. And it's having that stock watch list to be able to do it. I mean, I'm fully invested in the market. And even though I had a good November, as I say, Sondrel halved this morning. So that was as they dumped. And then Pfizer, which is a big position I have for the long term, they came out with, unfortunately, poor pipeline news on one of their
GPL drugs.
It's an obesity drug. I mean, to be perfectly honest, I'd already written it off. I didn't because it was one of two, and the first one they'd already dropped, and then because of side effects, and this one they dropped as well for the side effects, and they were a similar sort of like therapeutic. So it doesn't surprise me. I mean, all I would say is that, you know, I'm viewing that, you know, Pfizer, Bristol Myers and Roche as 5-10 year holds. So this is really, and this is short term noise for me. There's no way I'm realizing at these levels because I think they actually do have a really good pipeline going forward. But hey, it's been painful, this trade. I mean, most of the selections I've made in 2023, unfortunately, have been redeployers, have been pretty poor.
Yeah, so, that was painful. I mean, say before they came out with that, they said, the only problem we hear, they have lumpy contracts. And sometimes, it says bad news follows bad news sometimes, and you think, oh, God.
I've had a good run over the last 3 years, and I really can't, and the portfolio is up double digits this year overall. So, you've got to mark yourself at where the bottom line is. And this is one stock which hasn't worked yet. And I'm not selling at distress levels, which is what Siemens have done, because I don't believe the company is in that bad a situation. And the good news is that having just dumped 11% onto the markets, you know, Siemens Software, then it should clear that overhang to allow progress going forward on any good news. And let's just see how they get on. They should, in theory, you know, because that they are operating in a good AI sector for sort of like, you know, ASCII chips where they do all the design. Yeah. But hey, it hasn't translated into a decent, you know, stock price performance at all. I mean, probably 80-90% down this year, but
you've just got a market cap now. Wow.
No, you just got to basically accept that sometimes you're wrong. If they actually do have the skills that I thought they did, and the expertise and the contracts, which I do think they've got, and the customers, and they execute against it, it isn't all over. You can see a big rally in this coming. So my thesis isn't wrong. It's just that, unfortunately, they haven't executed against it, and it's really unwound very, very rapidly. But I wrote it off. And all I would say is I would not recommend anybody to go into it unless you've really got asbestos suits or a really thick skin. I mean, you know, it's a high-risk stock.
Didn't they say they needed funding, or do they need more?
No, they didn't. No, they didn't. But who knows? Let's just, I mean, I would say that if they get any bad news, then they'll need funding. So let's wait and see anyway.
Okay. By the way, a bit of housekeeping there. Welcome along if you're watching. Don't forget, you know, ask some questions if you want to ask some questions, and Paul will pick it up. So we've got here, I don't know much about this company. I haven't looked at the chart before, but Riffisoft says, flooring business James Halstead are seeing improved output and profits materially ahead of comparatives, saying they'll meet full-year market expectations, but not that they'll beat. But that's quite bullish. If they're going to, you know, I mean, I assume they've, you know, there's a little chart there. If that kind of flooring company is saying they'll meet full-year expectations, then that suggests to me things are not as bad. And in fact, they've been sold off a lot recently from, you know, £2 to £1.90. Yeah. So maybe that's priced in comparatives, but I don't know much about James Halstead.
It all depends on what sort of visibility they've had on their order book and whether these are orders they've taken, say, in the first half and they're executing against it. And then the big question is what it's going to be like in 2024. But I would say is that, you know, as the house builders seem to be moving up, that's suggesting that new build is going to be starting again soon because of, you know, greater demand and with house prices rising. So you might find these guys get their timing perfectly right. So, I mean, they've probably been hugely sold off and they're sort of, you know, pricing in a tough recession, but actually it may not happen at all. So,
and the figures there, until 30th of June, of course, so that's full year results. I mean, you know, they beat up 4% on top line. Profit before tax is pretty much the same, flat. So, you know, they haven't been hit massively. The share price has gone down, but cash of 63 million. So,
and they generated 11 million of cash.
Yeah.
It's not bad. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. So, yeah, I would, you know, it looks a sense. I don't know what they're trading on, what multiple, but a lot of this sector, when it comes to housing and building products, is really well sold off. I mean, you know, I've got Michelmers, as I mentioned before, and it's got plenty of cash. It's going to get through it, but it doesn't mean economically wise it's going to, you know, it's going to boom in the near future. And I think the start of 2024 will be tough for it. But that doesn't mean, as you and I know, because the stock market and the economy work in different things. And and if we start to see sort of like green shoots coming through on building products and bricks in particular for the back end of 2024, this one's going to move very rapidly because it's already been priced.
By the way, I did cover this a couple of days ago. Someone said, this is Super Mono. Paul, spot on Acid Co. I piled in at 40 pence too. Thank you. Now, I did look at the chart on this the other day, and I said, tell Paul, I know he's watching, that this is looking good. I don't know where it is today. I've not looked at it. A-S-T-O, so Acid Co.
Look at that.
I put that line in beforehand. So you can see that line, you know, previous, there's hit that high there of 44.5, 45, and that's the 200-day moving average. And literally, it's broke above that. It's touching the 200-day. That is looking quite good now. You're a higher high. That maybe it won't go any lower probably, but it may need to go sideways. But it seemed like downtrend's ended there. That's good.
Well, I think there's a bit of a story to that, okay? Because it popped yesterday and on big volume, about a million or 2 million.
Was that you?
Sorry?
Was that you?
No, it wasn't me. No. I've run out of cash. I spent my last pennies on Asset Co. I couldn't buy anymore. No, it was. In Simon Thompson, who's a sort of like a very influential stock picker for Investors Chronicle, in his Alpha report, which is a subscribers only report, he tipped Asset Co yesterday, and obviously a lot of people agreed. And his fair value, he had a buy rating on it, and his fair value was £1. So obviously people decided to pile in on some of the parts on basically the logic that we'd discussed before. So. It's one of those which has been unfairly sold off, and it's realizing. But I'm glad somebody, you know, bought 40p and now is sitting on a nice little 10% profit in a day. But there's a long way to go.
It's come down. I mean, it's come down from like 240 pretty much to 220, £2 a share is now at 46. There's so many of these. You know, I went through the other day. Look at these. Sort of asset managers in that sort of area. I mean, look at all the charts of these. I'll put them on a longer term view. But, Premier Miton, Bridgepoint, AJ Bell, 3i Group is the only one that's literally rallying.
Yeah, that's
like
not
crazy.
An asset. That's basically a private equity guy, and they're a private equity provider, and they've just got a massive position in a discount retailer over in Europe somewhere. So it's a very special situation. That's really a proxy on a discount retailer in Europe somewhere, because that's 60% of their value.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. Well, Ashmore there, yeah. You know, Man Group, they're Schroeder's, Gypnaster, Impact's asset, they're all pretty much in the same boat, you know, digging the hammering. And we did say this morning, actually, if you take a position into one of these asset managers, it's a double whammy, when you double leverage the market. So when it starts to rise, net asset value goes up and everything, and it literally, they'll accelerate very quickly. It's a good play on sentiment for the market, isn't it, really, you know? Mm. Anyway, any news out, Paulie?
Not really. I mean, obviously, Equals is, you know, is still my biggest position, even though I sort of top sliced before the recent strategic review. And then what they've said is that they're extending the deadline for firm offers for the company until the 27th of December, I think. And one of the companies there that seems to be still in there is that US private equity house. And I'm just trying to remember what the name is. Is it?
Let's have a look. I'll find it now.
I can't remember what it's called.
EQLS. There we go. It's so the last one was.
Ooh, it was Madison Dearborn. That was it. Madison Dearborn Partners, which seems to be the. So what's how you interpret that to me, which I think lots of other people have also interpreted it this way, is that clearly they're still in discussions. They've probably. I mean, I really don't know. I'm just speculating here. They've probably submitted a provisional shake hand type bid, and now they're just really making sure that they've got the funding and they're going to put it into a bank account and to do the escrow. But there's still plenty of sort of like, you know, T's to cross and I's to dot on finalizing it all. So, I mean, it was funny because, I mean, I've sort of pitched it in. It's a 50-50 play for whether it's going to get taken out at all by the deadline, because these things can fall away for whatever reason. But when I went down to Mello, I mean, I just got inundated with questions on Equals and the sort of like the considered view from a lot of professional investors down there, not me, but was actually that they think it is actually going to happen. Whether, I mean, it's all speculation, who knows? Anyway, regardless of that, I repeat, you know, I think this is a win-win for long-term investors. If they get a bid that the board, you know, approves, then you get a nice Christmas present. If that falls away and, you know, they're successful at lifting and shifting the UK software platform, the payments platform, out into Europe, then in a year's time, they may well get another bid, but it'll be a lot higher because they'll have double the business. So, you know, I think you're going to win either way to a certain extent. You just got to be patient and let the process sort it out. If I'd have sort of like put my finger in the air and said what the probability was of the deal done from the people I spoke to, about 10 or 15 people came up to me, and their considered view is probably 75% certain that the deal is going to get on. But I don't think it's going to be that as much as that. It's 50-50. So anyway, the share price is sort of like hasn't really moved, but it does suggest that there is something happening, because they'd have just obviously both parties will have just walked away otherwise, and there may well be somebody else. I don't know.
Okay. And marvelous. And any other news on stocks you don't hold, fella? Or things that's been going on.
That I don't hold. What else we got?
Well, you do.
Yeah, of course. Yes, Supreme. I forgot.
I looked at those and some good
results. Massively good value there. I mean, they came out with a, you know, standout first half results and upgraded guidance for the full year by about 15%, and they're still really cheap. I mean, when I interviewed the CEO and the CFO on, you know, early in the week after the results came out, and they were trading on a PE of about 6 or something, and they're generating so much, you know, underlying cash as well. And they're being driven by their vaping division and also by their third-party brand that they distribute in the UK, the Elf Bar brand. And, and then they're seeing strong growth across all their other, you know, divisions, the lighting, the batteries, and, you know, the sports and nutrition as well. So it's all sort of like, you know, coming together, really. Profits are strong. Top line is just absolutely killing it at the moment, and they're becoming the sort of the best in class operator. In fact, they're the go-to person to talk on behalf of the industry to what measures should be put in. I mean, the CEO was on the...
I was listening. I listened to Wake Up the Money in the mornings, and I know Rachel Burden, Rachel Burden in the breakfast show. She's really strong, you know, about vaping, because she's got about five kids, I think. But yeah, I was listening, and, I thought, and now speaking to us now, Sandy, and I thought, what? That's us guy from Supreme. So yeah, I was surprised, but he believes saying all the right things, you know?
He genuinely believes it.
Every retailer, he says, attempts to be selling these to young kids to be fined heavily. Our packaging, we're now making it very bland packaging, and that makes it not attractive to young kids, because we are about, you know, helping people give up cigarettes. That's what it's about, you know?
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, there's a bit of regulatory overhang at the moment, because the government is doing a sort of like consultation, which will end on the 6th of December, so next week. Okay. And then they're probably going to take 2 months to finalise what exactly is going to be put towards Parliament into law. Once that's known and that uncertainty is clarified, then I actually think this is going to get a huge re-rating. I mean, my fair value is 225 on it. Even though it's popped, you know, sort of like a 20% this last week, there's still a lot of runway. I mean, you know, it's still trading at roughly around about probably 7x PE, and it's got a solid, really good balance sheet, generating a lot of cash, and the top line is absolutely flying. So, you know, it's got everything right for it. So, you know, if I was a betting man, I could see this in 12 months being £2. You know, once it's clarified what the industry is doing, then the winners are going to continue winning in this one. But it will get a re-rating, and even if it was £2, it wouldn't be expensive. It'd probably only be on 10x, or, you know, sort of like, well, probably 12x PE, which would be it's not huge. Yeah, when you look at
do you want to see a nice chart, Paul? Look at this.
Go for it. Oh yeah, good energy. Yeah, hey, wow.
That's
a rocket ship, isn't it?
Do you know what the funny thing was? Right, I during Lawrence Hulse, isn't it? I sent it down here. And I sent him a sort of picture. I said, "Have a look at these, Lawrence. I've done a video on them. Have a look." He said, "Oh, I'll have a look at them." I said, "This is where I see it playing out." I actually posted a chart of a bold arrow, a ball coming round and rallying. I didn't think it'd go that far, but it's gone from, like, you know, it doubled. But I said, it seems to have played out. I sent a picture of him today. He has replied. But
he's the fund manager at Dowgate, isn't he?
I don't think he's in a position, but
do you still hold all the shares?
Yeah, you're holding.
Well done.
I said to people before, I don't top slice. What I'll do is I will put support levels in and stop losses, you know. So, because in my mind, I keep saying, you know, you never know. You need one stock that can transform your portfolio. Don't limit the upside on that, because momentum and volume, once the sellers dry up sometimes, because this had a bit of a seller, you know, just selling away, and I thought, why is it going down? I said, they've got a new CEO, the margins are improving, the business model's changed, you know, the top line is good, but the margins are going to improve, and they're below net asset value. They've got a tumbler of cash. I don't understand, they're in a hot industry of, you know, renewable energy and sort of supplying services there. And then all of a sudden, it popped up one day on a good sort of report, and then it got sold into. This is so frustrating. And then it just dried up, and then it just shot up. You've got a couple of sellers taking profit. But all these people taking profit, you know, top slicing all the way up there. No, maybe put a couple of stop losses in so you don't ever lose money on it. And that way, it's a risk-free investment pretty much. And that is like gold dust. Once you get into a level where you can put a stop loss in, it's a risk-free investment. Just sit back a little bit. And then if it goes up further, okay, move them up. But allow for a bit of volatility. So I'm never going to lose on this. The minimum I'm going to make is probably about 50%. You know, and so I'm just going to see how far it goes, because I've expected it to come back many times. It just keeps powering away. So you know, Destiny's had a bit of a pullback.
What's your percentage? What percentage?
Now it's taken about 20% of my, about 22-23% of my.
Wow, well, really well. That's a huge pat on the back. Fantastic news. That's actually a bit of patience. You showed it. You know, you went through a bit of problems. It came down. And
sometimes you look at things. Have I got this wrong? I looked at this, you know, I went through the fundamentals several times, and the chart was annoying. I got in too early. I didn't pay attention to the momentum. And because of that, I was like holding it, kept going down here. It rallied. Here we go. And then we came back down again. Oh, bloody hell. So when it started really taking off. But I mean, you know, Destiny's done very well as well. It's more than doubled. But I mean, it has come back a little bit. You see, I was buying sort of, I bought down here. But at 30-odd pence.
Is this another 20% holding, Destiny?
Yeah, this is, And this is, it's come back a little bit, but now it seems to have dried up the sellers here. So hopefully now it goes sideways and up again. But yeah, you're going to have a pullback when you rally from, like, you know, even doubling the stock. That it's going to have a pullback. But
fantastic. Yeah, so what about you still own Truefin, do you?
Yeah, I still, that's been a bit of a nightmare. I think it's been largely. I don't have a massive position. There we are.
Yeah, we're not now anyway.
No. I only, you know, the way I invest is I start off sort of smallish, and if it doesn't start really rallying, I don't buy any more into it. Because if the loss gets bigger, then it doesn't hit me. I sort of try and leverage towards the winners. Yeah. But I think it's been hitting sentiment with gaming a little bit. You know, you have all these gaming companies coming out, you know, Team 17, and these Tiny Build, all those, been coming out with really bad updates. And I think because they got PlayStack then, I think, you know, they may be hit with that. But like I said, as yet, PlayStack isn't really generating a significant amount of revenue for them anyway, but this is the next 2 years are going to be. But I think sentiment-wise, it's been quiet on the news, and they have sold off a bit of PlayStack, actually, the sort of ad tech side of the business. Yeah. But yeah, it's just lack of news and it's rolling over in sentiment. But it's annoying because it doesn't take about. I really like Satago, and I think that's the one that to me an auction is quite good. Auction is very transparent, you know, visibility of their recurring revenue. But it's a small grower, whereas Satago I think could be a blowout grower. And in fact, the multiples, well, the potential of that is very big. They're in, like I said, Lloyd's used them. Sage used them, and they are talking with other banks and stuff.
Do they need more money at all?
No, they don't now, because they've sold Virtus, which is there. They did have cash, they raised money, and then they sold Virtus. Which is funny.
In that case, it's just to be patient. It's a bit like good energy. At some point in time, it'll be a rocket ship, but you just got to be patient and wait.
I mean, so the 51 million market cap, they had an offer on Oxygen last year, I think it was, for 26 million. They turned down. So if you realize, you know, one of their companies, they've got three companies, is worth half their market cap. So, and I think Satago's worth more than Oxygen. So, it is just a case that I do like. I'm going to wait until, you know, Satago fully commercializes, when it starts really churning out. And then hopefully, once we see those top line figures going up, I think it'll move. But,
What about XP Factory? Because obviously it's a big period, isn't it?
They're literally, I had a stop loss in them. And do you know what? This is where I didn't pay attention to the chart. I stuck to the story and I fell in love with the stock too much. And literally, I was in Turkey and I couldn't get online on my stockbroker account. I had to call them up and start buying over the phone. I was buying every day down here. I was buying every day.
Gordon Greco.
I know. I go to the room and buy there. I was buying every day. So my average was 7-8 pence.
Oh, good.
Shot up. Yeah, shot up to that. And, you know, 45 pence, and it started rolling over. And even if I paid attention to the moving averages there, I would have sold, but I didn't, and I held on. But it did trip me out. I had a stop loss in, I think, around about 15 pence here. So I doubled my money. I did take some off, I think, higher up here.
Yeah.
But I pretty much, you know, doubled most of it. But I shouldn't have fallen in love with it. For some reason, I love the company. I think the company's doing very well. But it's just when something's not going right, there's a seller in there somewhere taking it down. I you've got to go with it. I mean, my man, I've got to go with it. I mean, it's, you know, and I should have maybe sold a bit earlier. But this is a company right now. I'm thinking, this is getting cheap now, because they're going to do over 40 million in revenue, be profitable this year, pretty much. And they are, what, 23 million, 24 million market cap. And I think this is just a start. Over 40 odd million in the top line. Next year, over 50 million. And I'm thinking, and I think it's one of those things where I'm really looking to get back in, because I think too early to. But yet, you know, the chart isn't looking very pretty.
If you have 30% in cash, about 20% in good, and about 20% in XP, and let's put those together slightly more, so it's about 45%.
No, 20% in 20% in
good.
In good energy. Yeah, I've got about 20% in a fund, which is 40%.
Okay.
I've got about 15% in Destiny.
Okay, so that's 55. And then you've got 30% cash.
No, yes. And I've got SB Silver Bullet as well. In fact, it's really odd, Silver Bullet. They just raised money at 70 pence. They raised, right? It's £1 million. They don't need much because they're going to be profitable next year. But they went down to 70 pence. Look at that. That's the day of the raise. Yeah. Went down, got bought back up. Now it's back at its highs. I really like that. Doesn't happen very often now.
No, I know. That's a very positive sign.
Yeah. And I thought, wow. So, in fact, I know the person who actually took the placing, all of it.
Really?
Yeah.
Does it hasn't been disclosed?
No, it will be, because he's going to be a TR1, but he called me up and said, what stocks do you like? And I told him that. And then next thing, a placing came out, and I said, what happened there? And he said, I said, and the placing guy, I said, did you take part in the placing? He said, take part in it. I took it all. So, okay, fair enough.
Okay, we'll wait for that bated breath. But yeah, if there's one person who's taken the whole lot and he's convinced, then he's made the trade of the century, hasn't he?
Yeah, well, he's a sharp cookie and he's got a lot of money. But yeah, I mean, I just talked to him about it, showed him the video, and he said, I really like that. And he looks at me once again into sort of AI, and I showed him that they're in advertising. And of course, it's a huge market, $700 billion a year being spent, and it's still growing. And now you've got the deprecation of cookies, getting targeted consumers. How do they do it? Yeah. And I said, well, they've got a product for that. And if you look at their last, and in fact, even this statement here on their on the fundraise, they do say here, like I said, Omnicom has basically said they're using them pretty much. They said here, they've announced here 79% top line growth. The company has witnessed significant demand for its AI-driven insights capability forward. So significant demand there from clients, and this will help them, scale that. So, so I quite like it. I mean, in the bull market, this is the kind of thing that will be like multiples of where we are now. Without the Hope and Hyper on this, we'd be pushed up massively. But it's a bear market, and of course, there's a little bit of worry over funding. So now that's done, in my mind, the worry is gone, because their cash burn has come down massively after they've finished developing 4D AI. Mm.
So what else is in your portfolio, just to finish it off? Because you've got good energy, Destiny Pharma, True.
I've got and also another one that hasn't gone very well. But again, it's not a big holding, which I quite like as well. I still like it a lot. Is Intelligent?
Oh yeah, Intelligent. Yeah, exactly. Intelligent.
It's very liquid, but I still like it. I mean, two of sales, but they're going to be profitable on the cash they have next year. They've got three AI, commercial products with big companies, and. And so I do like them. I don't know why they're not getting the traction. It's one of those things where I don't understand. Sooner or later, hopefully they will take off, because I just think they're a very good company. And they're so busy. If you check them out on social media, at every conference, they're doing so much work. They're so hard working. Mm. I just think that it's going to do well. It's just a matter of time there. And I did buy on. It's one of those things where it's so illiquid. It's hard chart wise.
Yeah.
I did buy on this crossing moving average here, and then it shot up. This is where the mail on Sunday sort of tipped it. I waited for it to come back down. And then literally, it's just, I don't know, you don't get many sellers, it'll just go down. So it's annoying. But
I'll make a prediction on this one, okay?
What?
Somebody will buy this within 12 months.
Wow, here we are then. Yeah.
I don't own it, but I, from what you've said, it sounds as though I really do have some leading technology there. And it's just a snippet in terms of the valuation. So, this is a classic sort of trophy asset that give somebody who's a bigger player just a huge amount of extra differentiation, and it could really multiply bring forward a lot of their other sales. So it seems like
the AI side of it. In fact, the AI side of it has come from nothing. But like I said, if you look around at actually commercial AI products, there aren't many. There are a lot of people talking about AI, but they do. Their sales are doubling pretty much every forecast the next 3 or 4 years. So until it's literally making, I think in 2025 they're thinking about around about $25 million in revenue, half of that from AI. And that's from nothing, So, and they say,
I'll give you another prediction. The buyer will be GE Healthcare.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, exactly. It's not a far stretch, is it, to think that?
Oh, I know. Yeah, exactly. I know.
I have one more. I can't reveal who it is yet, but
while you remember that one. I mean, I've got one company which came out with a trading update, GB Group, all his interims that came out with.
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and then basically they were pushing to right when they were going to see growth. So rather than seeing the second half, they'll start seeing it next year. I mean, this is a work in progress. I bought it as a work in progress, and it's taking a bit longer. And to me, that's not a problem, simply because, I'm a patient investor, and this will just be noise in a long-term story. The key is that, with AI and impersonalization of people on the internet, et cetera, then, their services of ID identification for people who are purchasing online should actually do really well. But hey, at the moment, it hasn't worked out. It joins the club. I mean, a lot of my selections this year have been poor, but I've got no problem as long as the thesis has still got to be playing out. And you've just got to be patient to a lot of these you know, stocks.
Yeah. That was so close to that. I mean, if you look at that previous high there in July, it was at, 265, and nearly broke that, but it didn't quite make it. And then all of a sudden, it must have come up with that result.
Yeah, that was the trading update. Yeah. They're basically saying that they were hoping to get growth before in the second half of this current financial year, and now they're saying they won't see growth. It'll be about flat or slightly down. So, I mean, you know, any negativity comes off. I mean, that's, to be honest, is it a major problem? Not for me, because as I say, I look sort of 3 to 5 years ahead. If they were going to say, actually, a lot of the you know, my customers are transferring to another competitor, then I'd be seriously worried. But they're not saying that at all.
Yeah.
Have you got any eyes on? Have you got any? What's on your stock watch list? What's the top of your stock watch list?
I was looking at for a while. And it was strong on the chart. I'm not going to say what it is yet because I can't.
Oh, go on. Spill the beans, man.
I can't get a position in it. I literally got a tiny vision. And I'm just going to have to wait for a little bit of a sell off a little bit. But it's small but profitable. And I think it's going to do well. I still see the economy and the market's two different things, you know. And I still see a lot of companies suffering for a long time. This is a bit of a contrarian play on that, isn't it? It's, you know, I think they'll benefit from a tough economic market.
Okay. I think I can guess which one it is then in that case. That whole sector is quite illiquid, isn't it? The sort of insolvency plays. There's a few out there.
So yes, it's not quite insolvency, but I know what you mean.
We looked at
two today, actually. Me, John and I on the screen there, and so one was Ramsden's and one was H&T, and they're both quite strong, you know.
That
sector's quite strong, is worth looking at, right? I haven't got any of those two. By the way, someone says, "Are you worn out?" In fact, we just answered this. Are you both fully invested or still hold some cash? Paul's fully invested.
I'm fully invested.
I have a 30% cash.
I've only got 2%. Cash. I do actually have a 14% in those gilts, but I'm just going to hold those for 15 months. I mean, it's paying 5% tax free into the tax wrapper ISAs and SIPs, and it just is a no brainer. That one, I've not had any interest in my life for the last 15 years, so this is like a real good Christmas come early. No, I'm fully invested. I wish I had some more cash.
Yeah. In fact, Supermono says we looked at Ingenta today as well. There was come on there. I've never really heard of them. That's very liquid stock, but if you see what they do, ING, they're like an 18 million market cap.
Yeah.
And Supermono says if you look at them, and he quite likes them. So you can see new customer wins there. But they are a leading provider of software and services to the global publishing industry. And that's gonna be a hard area. Mm. But if you look at their figures, it's not too bad. To June, half year, 9% up to 574. So this is half year, so obviously full year is going to be obviously more than double that. So what are they, 1.5 times sales? They are cash of 2.59. They are profitable, cash from operations of $300,000. But it looks quite nice. But I mean, even the chart, but you can see it's a very bitty chart. There's uptrend, but I'd be surprised. I mean, if you look at the average daily volume on that, it's pretty tiny, is it?
What type of software do they do? Do you know?
Supermono, what type of software do they do? So 9,000 shares they trade a day, the 128 average. So yeah, it took us $10,000 for me in stock. That's hard. You got to look at that sometimes. I don't know what they do.
That's the key is trying to understand, you know, is it absolute must-have software or is it sort of like discretionary? If anything discretionary is getting hit at the moment, unfortunately.
Look at that, though. It's gone from 2020. It's literally, if you look at the AIM-ALL share, that's the direct opposite of that, pretty much. That's gone up while everything else has gone down, or a lot of stocks gone down. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is such that are the fundamentals improving before you can really believe it? I mean, another one I own that has gone up, actually, it's the recent one is Water Intelligence. If you look at that.
Oh, yeah, no, actually, I saw that. I literally had an alert on that. I was going to tell you about that. I'll show you where it's it broke 200-day moving average. That's a good start, that. That may roll over now. You can say that's probably the bottom, and that's, you know, the end of the downtrend.
Mm. So they've come out with no news whatsoever, and I would say that uptick is guilty until it proves itself innocent, because it's got to see some fundamentals, because the weakness started really because of their exposure to new build. But if the business is actually you know, seeing, you know, better improvements and performing better than expectations, then it's totally justified because it's really, really cheap. But I have this skeptical view that if things go up or go down on no news, yes, it alerts you that it might be some good or some bad information coming out, but it doesn't mean it always happens. It can be for a whole bunch of different reasons.
Yeah, so. Well, largely, I mean, when you see that sometimes on no news, you can see if there's been a seller in there, they could have dried up, you know, they could have stopped selling, and all you need is a little bit of liquidity. But yeah, what you need essentially to consolidate there or to confirm it is them to rise on good news. That's what you need.
There's not much liquidity in it. That's the problem. And I struggled getting a position in it anyway. I mean, I think they're about, what, 70 or, you know, 80 million 70, market cap. But but it still is fairly tightly held. And it comes down to is sort of like, you know, do you trust the share price volume when it's really light? And personally, I don't to a certain extent. And if it was bigger volume, then I'd say, yeah, that looks really good. But on light volume, I'm a bit of a scare. I'd love to think it's going to, you know, it's got a blockbuster set of numbers trading update. I just don't believe it myself because it'd be an outlier if it is. It's a tough environment out there for all things sort of like, you know, services and corporate and B2B. We all know it. They're all been saying the same, you know, people sort of destocking, people, anything, cutting back as much as they can, reducing their cost base. And these guys obviously service that type of market. So I don't know. I mean, I'd love to think.
Those interims weren't too bad. By the looks of it.
The company's doing okay, but is it going to beat expectations to justify like a 25% rise in the share price? And I really don't know. I'd love to think yes, it is, but I think you're right. It will come down when they put a trading update, and let's just assume it's in line. Then people will think, okay, well, there wasn't any major news involved, and therefore we'll sell it off and consolidate, which wouldn't be a problem for me because I have a longer term view. But I just say I wouldn't be sort of like cracking out the Christmas champagne on that move myself because it's guilty and it's until it's proven innocent because the volume's not good. Yeah, there's a big smile for you.
what you want is literally a little bit of
big
that
smile.
Time. Yeah, big smile, and then literally break those previous highs. If it does that, that's nice. That's nice. Otherwise, if it can't do that, it's going to come back down. That's not good. But sooner or later, you wanted to break these previous highs. That just shows it wasn't just a drying up. It wasn't just a technical bounce. You know, it was something else behind it. But
have you got anything else on your stock?
I'm watching loads of companies. Really, it's just a case of. In fact, I was talking today about Focusrite. With John, we're talking about that, and I said I do like them. You know, and he said, they've been hammered. Like I said, in fact, I last mentioned Teams. In fact, let's go back to Team 70 in a second because I last mentioned that. So I'm not going to get into anything until they come out with some fundamentals. And look at that, Team 70 going down.
There you go. Yeah.
They came up with a trading update. Woof! Yeah. And all of a sudden you think, well, okay, it doesn't matter. They've got to improve and they can become better value. I mean, but again, you know, Tune came out with stuff that weren't that impressive, but they were sold off. But these, you know, there are good businesses suffering at the moment. They'll become good businesses again, but you just have patience. And in fact, I've been talking about, you know, future PLC.
Yeah, you've been going on about it for ages, haven't
and
you?
I know, for ages. And I said, you know, I was going to get in recently because it crossed this 20-year moving average. And I thought, okay, no, the results are out on the 7th. Just wait. All of a sudden, they just fell off a cliff yesterday. Then, and someone said they've been downgraded, apparently. So that's annoying. But I mean, I want to see in this environment, you can wait until you get a fuller picture. Because they came up with a trading update a few months back. I think it was a month back where they said adjusted operating profits is in line, 254 million. I thought, well, that seems fine. But, you know, we all know trading updates are highlights. They're like the estate agent, what they want to show you when a house is for sale. They won't show there's no garden or the garden's, you know, dump. Yeah. You know, they'll only show the best bits. So I don't want to just deal in trading updates. I want to see the full results before I make any decision on that because you don't know how much their debt they've got. Has that gone up? What's going on? You know, and you can afford to do that, can't you? In the bear market, you know, wait until financial results come out because nothing's going to really fly. I mean, are they going to knock it out of the park? No. It's just a case of, will it be not as bad as we think? And so I'm going to wait till they come out, see how the market reacts and then, you know, see from
there is an exception to the rule on that one, though, as we've seen coming full circle. You highlighted the start, the house builders. They've not, you know, they've essentially they've moved ahead of interest rate expectations for next year and what the swap market. Their results are pretty lacklustre. None of them are upgrading, but they're not getting any worse. And they've rocketed basically because of interest. So when it comes to sort of like waiting for results to come out, if you wait for the results to improve next year, then you're going to, you've missed it. But so these will.
I don't wait for results to improve. All I want to see is that the results come out. I want to look at them and I want to make sure that it don't tank by 20% on the results. Cause that's what can happen. It's like Team 17 came out with results and they tanked 20%, you know, some of that. So I want us to make sure the results aren't worse than we think they are, because if they are worse, a company's tank. And so, I just want to make sure.
So you know, the principle I was going to, continue with is the read across. Are there any other sectors that also are rate sensitive that haven't moved, like the house builders? And that'll be a fertile ground because they will move before the results start coming out. And things like James Halstead, the building products, etc. Anything else which deserves, which is interest rate sensitive.
It's looking for those
type of, sort of like categories that, Motorpoint, you're right. I mean, that, because they obviously sell used cars and new cars, etc.
Well, the largest independent of retailer, if you look at Vertu, of course, who do franchises, they did a lot stronger. Mm. Like Vertu's chart, we're looking at, so Vertu do franchise. I mean, is it Vertu? And if their chart is like amazing, look at it, opposite. It's like, but Motorpoint, they rely on, like I said, financing. And I bought a car recently and I said, what's financing like these days then? And I said, well, news cars, 10%. Wow.
Yeah, I know. That's
now, if you go back to, that's going to throttle the industry. And like I said, they came out and the results weren't that good. But look at that. They sort of shrunk back a little bit. But now they're starting to rally a bit. I just genuinely think something like Motorpoint, this margins are quite the same. But if they get any, if it's not getting any worse, they're going to rally. And, they've come down from a long way down from 380 down to literally 885 pence. So, I think it's something like that, very consumer facing. It's a big ticket item, like a house, pretty much. But it's people need houses. People still need to move sometimes when they don't want to, but people don't have to really buy a new car. So I think they're more sensitive. But if you see a less worsening environment, things like that could do quite well,
I'll tell you one which will do well.
Go on.
Yeah, but I need your expertise on timing, and there'll be bound to be an ETF. But the big cap miners, and the big cap oil integrateds, they're making particularly the integrateds, they're making said loads of money in terms of cash flow positive. I think the cash flow margins are like 10 to 15%.
So what's interesting? Do you see the rises there are all miners because China's come out with a bit better than expected.
Yeah, exactly.
Anglo American, by the way, I think that's one of the biggest holdings.
Knock up the chart because they're big into copper, aren't they? Anglo American. Yeah, they have a De Beers as well.
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest holdings in my fund.
And that's the point is that with the house builders as a success, a sector, just about you could choose any of them and they'll all go up, because all ships are going to rise with lower interest rates. If China does start putting the juice onto their economy, all of those miners are going to go as well. So BHP, Antofagasta, Rio Tinto, all that kind of stuff. And they're really, really cheap and the balance sheets are excellent. So I would go for, if you've got a bit of a 12-month time horizon and, you're not looking for sort of like mega, this isn't going to double, but it might well go up by 25% and pay and 5 or 10% dividend yield, which wouldn't be too bad if you're a big cap investor. And likewise, chuck up Shell or BP, because they're the same. Okay. I mean, they're making so much cash. And they're dead cheap. And they're trading on about 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
And then the expertise is what I think this is where you come into it, is to try and time when you think the thing is going to start moving.
They're quite strong. That's Shell, BP. They're quite strong. They haven't really come off a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is such that in terms of valuation, they're still trading at around about sort of 6 times. They're not massive at all. So they're generating a shed load of cash. So the timing is to sort of like, if you believe that it's going to be a softness in the economy, but they're going to lead it in terms of, where the oil price is going and the crack spreads, then, it's to try and time that, because there's good value in all of those, and they can be sort of like, you know, almost like no-brainer trades if you have a long-term time horizon.
This is the fund I hold, right? Mm. These are the biggest holdings they hold. Rio Tinto, yeah. HSBC, Brooks America, Legan General, Imperial Brands, these are all the highest paid. So I'm just thinking, that's why I play that. This is rallying, actually. National Grid, BP, yeah. Shell. It's got all those Anglo-American, all those. So all those companies there, pays about 5.5-6% dividend, I think. But even that, of late, it's trying to break up a little bit through... in fact, there's the wrong one there. IUKD. Here we go. Look at this. So there's a support line there, bounce off that. This previous sort of resistance here, it's breaking up now. It's trying to break 200-day moving average. Mm. So we are seeing some FTSE 250 strength. Well, we know we have. And so that's not bad, you know. So
the logic, the fundamentals which agree with that chart, okay, mm-hmm. is if interest rates are going down, okay, yeah. competition for effectively bond proxies, which is this, which is a dividend, you know, shares play, et cetera, then that becomes more attractive as interest rates go down, because essentially you're earning more income by going into this product, going into this ETF. And conversely, mm-hmm. when interest rates were going up, the extra vantage you were getting with a 5 or 6% dividend yield was going to be, you know, you might as well just go to a risk-free rate and get, you know, gilts, et cetera. So as the interest rate comes down, this is a beneficiary. So this is absolutely what you'd expect. And that's why I said earlier on, you know, it's thinking about areas that are going to be interest rate sensitive and beneficiaries before they really start moving. And as you see, that one really has moved well.
Yeah, well, that's why I can't be bothered with all big stocks, because I literally, like I said, I've got all those.
Yeah, I agree. That makes sense.
Vistry, Man Group, and Vasco, Virgin, all those things there. So, in that fund. So, and then that can just focus on good small companies, you know, that I don't have to look at bigger companies too much. I know. I won't look above 500 million market cap, definitely. Very rarely do I look at, you know, above 300 million. So, and mostly it's below 100 million. But there are certain stocks, like, I mean, you know, Team 17, Focusrite, things like that, May Future, they've been hammered. And I think there's good upside in them. I'll look at them. But generally, I focus on, you know, small caps, because I've got the bigger caps.
So a little bit, and that's a good barbell strategy. You've got basically, you know, you've got a sort of a no-brainer 30% equity portfolio in dividend paying, which is essentially less risky. And then you're basically going into, you know, heavy into small caps. But you've also got 30% cash as well. So, you know, you've only got real high beta in 40% of your portfolio, albeit you'll be looking to deploy that spare cash into opportunities probably at the lower end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a sensible strategy that investors might want to sort of replicate, i.e. Yeah. go barbell, low risk one side, so you can sleep at night, and then go higher risk, what you want to, you know, with the rest of your portfolio.
Yeah, well, listen, I have a little, it's almost like in portfolio games. What I do with that, right, is I put 1% of my total portfolio value into that per month automatically. Yeah. So I know in a couple of years, 10 years time, I'll be having a nice dividend off that anyway, income anyway, so whatever. But I want to grow my other side of the portfolio, so it keeps that level around 30%. Otherwise, can I outperform that fund basically with my stock picking? If I can, it's a feeder fund for that. So as yet, it was up about 20% because I know so well now in Destiny and Good Energy, they expanded their size of the pie and they've reduced that smaller. But then if I start selling those, then I got more cash to put into that. So it's like a feeder fund, but I don't want it to sort of dominate my portfolio. I want to outperform it with other stocks, you know. So but in the end of the day, I think it'll come down to the time where whatever happens, even if I blow up the other side of the portfolio with two risk stocks, at least I've got that there. That I'll be a bit, you know, retire on, essentially.
That's and how many, what's your target number of stocks that you'll hold outside of your dividends?
Well, at the moment, what I've got...
at the moment, you've only got about 5, but your target...
Yeah, I don't want more than 10. Because I just think, even doing this, right, I do believe in this sort of diversification thing. I think if you're a full-time, if you've got a job, and you've got to keep your eye on sort of 10, 15 stocks, 15, 20, or even some people have 20, 30 stocks. It's hard. That's even hard for a fund manager. All that news coming in and realizing what sectors they're in, and you see something that's specific news-wise is not good for you. You may not even realize it sometimes. But so I think, you know, you really have to, and that's why I say, if you're going to, rather than diversify across 30 stocks, get a fund straight away you're diversified. Like a fund there, I've got 50 stocks in that fund, you know, so, or even Vanguard's, they've got thousands of stocks in their funds, you know, so you can do that. Then focus, but I'm not talking about going massive on them, but focus and learn about the business inside out. And so, you know, really get to know it from everything, even before you start investing in it, you know, to the point where who's holding the stock, you know, definitely, first of all, you know, what size it, cash, sector, understand the sector, all that. So really get to know the business you're investing in. And then, and start that way. So it's almost like, I mean, I think having too many stocks can take your eye off the ball really a little bit. I mean, if you're doing it full time, it's fine. But if you've got a 9-to-5 job or some other job, it's really hard to keep a track of like...
All I would say is that if you're going to go super concentrated, okay, which is like, you know, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, the late Charlie Munger, etc. You've got to be absolutely certain, as you say, in terms of your conviction plays. And the way to monitor that is what your hit rate is. And what is your hit rate, Justin, in terms of your stock picking over the long period?
I've never really done that hit rate. It's getting better.
Okay. Let me say one thing.
When I say about concentration, now there's different things in being. When I say, for example, if I'm confident in the stock, well, I won't go big on it straight away at all, because I can always be wrong, and time will tell me if I'm wrong or not. Now, if it starts going the right direction, they come up with updates that confirm the research I've done, then I'm happy averaging up. But I will never, ever go big on a stock initially, because I realize when you start researching a stock and you buy it first and foremost, it doesn't matter what size stock you've got in your portfolio. The new one you buy is always the one you're most enthusiastic about. And you can get carried away and go too big too quickly. And you could be completely wrong. You could have, you know, a confirmation bias, and you'd be very subjective. Once you put money into a company, you are subjective. You're almost like, you know, it's hard to be objective. You've got money in the game. So I will never go bigger than 3-5% maximum on a company in my first initial tranche, but 3% probably around about that level. And then if the news that comes out is right and the chart starts going up, I'm happy to average up. And that way I'll leverage towards winners. I won't average down, because I leverage, and I've done that before, I leverage towards losers. So what I'm saying, when I say concentrated portfolio, I don't mean going massive on companies initially. I mean basically doing a lot of research, then start small. Because if you are wrong, your mistake will be small, you know, loss will be small, you know. So there we are.
Okay, just give you a benchmark then, Justin. When you do work out what your hit rate is, okay, because I think it's important. Certainly investors would benefit from that, to know, given your concentration of what your hit rate is. Because mine is, as I've mentioned, is about 62%, okay? So I'm wrong nearly 40% of the time. I know, after 30 years, that I can have bad runs. I can have good runs and bad runs, okay? Now, if I go super concentrated, 5 or 10 stocks, and I've only got a hit rate, I'm wrong 40% of the time. If I go through a bad run, a lot of those can go wrong, which would be a huge amount of money. So it's, and that's why I tend to go anywhere between 15, I try and do 15 to 20 stocks. It's more legwork, but I know I'm wrong 40% of the time.
Yeah.
And therefore I cannot bet big time on a small number of stocks, because if I go through a bad patch, let's just say, for instance, I have 10 years of really good returns and I take my portfolio up 10 times. Yeah. If I then go through a really bad period, and I'm wrong sort of that 40%, you know, do 40% 5 times and I have a portfolio of 7, it might have been up 10 times. I'll go back down to 1 or 2 times, because that will crush my portfolio. So that's a wealth destruction. And that's why I've tried to match, and it isn't perfect. It's my own personal sleep at bed. I've tried to match my hit rate with the number of conviction stocks I have. And if your hit rate is a lot higher, albeit your risk tolerance is a lot higher than even mine, then that should drive how, for me, that's, for if you're an investor, that's what you should drive, you know, how many stocks you have. Don't go, you know, don't kid yourself. I'm trying to raise a point, a principle for investors. If investors match their number of stocks they hold to their hit rate, they've got a better chance of not having really bad, you know, results, which will occur at some point in time. Because if I go through a bad run with a 40% loss and I've got 15 to 20 stocks, it's going down from 10 times increasing to 7 times rather than 2 times.
But that's why I say to people, have a fund. I honestly think if you're and I've said this before, I said, listen, if you are a private investor, this part-time investing, I honestly think literally your fund should be equal to or more than your age. That's the percentage. A well-diversified low-cost fund should be.
Okay. So you're 30 then, are you?
So I do this every day. So, you know, it's literally, I got time to mess around. In the morning, it's all I do. You know, okay. I go to bed at night, literally writing about this and doing spreadsheets on it. So I eat, sleep, and even because of that, 20% is my fund. But I mean, if you are a very cautious investor, it should literally, you know, and I said to friends of mine, I said, it should be your age plus half your age if you're cautious in a well-diversified fund. And then you can look around for smaller companies that'll be act as a feeder to that fund. That's all it's for. Your retirement egg is the fund, right? But if you think you can make money in the market, then, you know, look around for small cap stocks, but you've got to do some research on them. You've got to, because they're very risky, but they can be very rewarding. So if you are new to this and you've got plenty of money there, and you are like 60, you know, you should have about 60% at least in a fund, a well-diversified fund. And that way you won't go all in on one sort of oil and gas stock that someone's told you about that you think is going to make you rich, because it's not. It's going to make you poor. So, literally. And I think if you are an experienced investor and you haven't got any retirement plans, you should have half your age in a fund anyway, you know, half your equivalent percentage-wise.
You've really surprised me there, Justin, because that is fantastic. I think that is fantastic advice that investors should, you know, really write down, because that gives
I've got it written down. So I talked about this every week on my webinar.
Oh, do you? Okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
I think that's great. Recently, I talked about the what, you know, when, how, and the what is what to research in and what to invest in. The when is looking at also the fundamental technicals and the how is portfolio management. And many people don't even pay attention to that. It's the most important thing of all. It's the third protector. All stock market is about is this: not to lose money. Now, if you succeed in not losing money, you will make money. But portfolio management is basically the last level of protection you've got against something coming left field, something not playing out what you like. And I think, you know, going low, like I said, first of all, having that fund, that'll protect you. So even if you go wrong and you've got like 60% in the fund, you're fine. You know, it doesn't matter. But then, you know, realizing then that, you know, it's lots of moving parts to investing, but portfolio management is very important. And I've thought so hard, I've written spreadsheets on it. And so, you know, and that's what I come to, you know, even if you're, you know, very experienced, I think you should be using a fund as sort of a backbone to your portfolio, because things go wrong. Even the best investors, they go massively wrong. So, you know, so that's a guarantee you will still have retirement money there in the end. If everything does go wrong, you still have that retirement fund there. So you don't mess around with that, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd highlight to investors, that is the first big Christmas present and something that people should take from, you know, from Father Christmas weight there, because that is fantastic. I think that's fantastic advice. That's the first time I've
ever said anything sensible. What are you saying?
No. First, yeah. I think that is absolutely brilliant, because you're right. You've then got your barbell strategy and you're, you know, you can get your alpha in your short, small number of portfolio, and you've got basically your sleep at bedside of it, but through that big fund to give you that diversification. So,
I worked out in 100 months. I started putting 1% total portfolio value into that in 8 months. I realized if I don't make any money elsewhere, then in 100 months, it's pretty much going to take about 100% of my portfolio, unless I start making money elsewhere to feed into it and make it longer. And so even if I go wrong, hopefully, you know, I'll still have enough money to put into it and retire on that if everything else goes wrong, you know. And I'm thinking, okay, how risky is that fund? Well, it's been the biggest, 50th dividend-paying stocks in the UK. You know, there are less risky funds out there, but I just consider that's okay. You know, considering I invest in nano caps and micro caps, I think that's quite a safe equity play, you know.
Brilliant. Yeah. Well, that's a great place to stop, I think. That is fantastic, Justin. Love it.
Marvellous stuff. Thanks for that. Walnut says, balance all the looters. Great advice, chaps. Walnut says, good to hear both strategies. I like Justin's smart, small strategy. I like Paul's larger portfolio strategy. There we are. Take your pick. It's like, you know, pick and mix. There we are. lovely stuff. Thanks for that, Paul. And we'll catch up in a couple weeks' time. Is it Christmas?
We'll have a special Christmas edition. You've started early.
I'll send you a special Christmas background, okay, so you can put it behind
I'll put some tinsel on my head.
All right. Lovely stuff.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.